Thank you for joining us for another episode of Baker Hosts Ad Nauseam, a podcast series focusing on new and trending advertising issues with an emphasis on the FTC and the NAB. I'm Randall Reuben King, and you're listening to Baker Hosts. We're once again joined by Amy Mudge and Daniel Kaufman, two partners from Baker Hostetler's advertising, marketing, and digital media team. Together, they have decades of advertising experience and approach advertising issues from multiple perspectives. On today's episode of Ad Nauseam, Amy and Daniel are back to discuss the topic of earnings claims in advertising and what that means for companies that make promises they can't keep. With that, welcome to Ad Nauseam, and let's turn it over to Amy and Daniel.
Welcome back, everyone, to Ad Nauseam. We've got a spring in our step because spring is in the air here in D.C., and we are so looking forward to the end of this dastardly cold winter. It has really been one for the record books.
It has been really brutal this year, and by the time this episode releases, I believe we should be right around peak cherry blossom season here in the district, which is always just a wonderful thing to see and experience if you can avoid the massive crowds, of course. Amy, are you one to usually try to check out the cherry blossoms every year?
Oh, absolutely. I never miss them. Although I think the question is whether do I walk amongst them? They're actually part of my commute on the way home. I can see them every day. So I do enjoy them, but it's every couple of years that I actually make the trek downtown and walk through the tidal basin, which is truly a gorgeous and a very local thing to do. How about you?
Pretty much the same. Every few years, I will go there and brave the crowds. I try to go like really early in the day before it's too crowded, and inevitably it's still really crowded, but worth it.
Well, so the topic here today is not going to be the weather. It's going to be earnings claims and what we've seen and will see from the FTC for the next few years. And you know, when we think earnings, let's talk for a minute about Daniel. What was your favorite pre-law job?
Totally favorite job was when I was in college working at the main desk in the student union building where I was giving out information, but also selling candy and cigarettes at the time. So I picked up a number of bad habits at that job, but it was just so much fun. I had a great time working there, saw everybody. It was just a fantastic experience.
Whoa, wait a minute. This back at Cornell, right? So this was this, were you selling candy and cigarettes like under the table, or was this officially sanctioned, sponsored Ithaca Cornell candy and cigarettes?
It was sanctioned and sponsored to the extent that those things were an issue in the mid-80s.
I'm so disappointed. I would have loved to hear that Daniel was running a little cottage industry scam under the desk. I think mine has to be anything away from a desk. I have to say I loved bartending. I still tell my kids, you know, if this law thing doesn't work out for me, I'm going to go back to it. I'm not sure if I could get a job in a bar at this ripe old age of mine, but I loved everything about the job. But we also have to discuss what is your least favorite job, and it can't be being a lawyer.
Least favorite job. I guess my first job when I was a teenager was literally telemarketing. So I managed that for about a few days until I was like, I can't take it anymore.
I did a similar telemarketing job, I think for one shift that was really awful, but a job I actually did in college that was the worst. I delivered balloons as a singing costumed messenger. That was truly, truly the worst, absolutely the worst. I had to be a magician. I had to be a bunny. I had to be a something my employer called a balloonatic. Yeah, you don't want to do that.
That sounds like the best job ever. I'm going to have to learn more about that. But okay, let's stop digressing. And the topic today, of course, the FTC and earnings claims. And, you know, we thought this would be a particularly good topic because one of the first real substantive announcements made by the new FTC chair Ferguson was on the implementation of an FTC joint labor task force to prevent American workers.
Not prevent, to protect.
To protect.
And now, that might have been a Freudian slip on your part, but no.
Thank you for catching that, Amy. And all of the FTC bureaus and offices are included in this mission, this task force, including, of course, our favorite, the Bureau of Consumer Protection.
We don't play favorites, but of course we do. And yes, the Bureau of Consumer Protection is what we'll be talking about today. But of course, it sounds like this task force will be tackling a lot of competition issues as well. But on our side, it's really the harm to gig workers through deceptive or unfair practices, deceptive job ads and scams, and deceptive business opportunities is probably going to be the focus.
Yeah, and let's be very clear at the outset. There's a really long, long history at the FTC focusing on a lot of these issues and challenging earnings claims way before the gig economy and way before the internet. And like it or not, those FTC notice letters that were sent out in 2021 on this specific issue of earnings claims laid out some of the really detailed history about old FTC cases involving earnings claims.
Now, I'm pretty sure this new FTC is not going to be relying on those notice of penalty offense letters in order to get civil penalties, but they are awesome history lessons, and they are worth the discussion as they really do tell an interesting story about litigated cases that the FTC has brought on the general topic of companies making claims about how much money people can make selling their products and services.
And certainly part of the reason we're not going to be seeing cases relying on the notices is that a lot of the cases involved earnings claims that were made in very different contexts than what we see today. And that's a point that Ferguson and Holyoke both made in a number of recent cases. But for example, we've got a case from 1976. It's the country's bicentennial, and the FTC is going after Encyclopedia Britannica, a case involved recruiting people for door-to-door sales, something we, of course, don't see that much of these days.
Daniel, did you have an Encyclopedia Britannica set in your home growing up?
We had an Encyclopedia set, but it might have been a cheap knockoff from Britannica.
Ooh,
it was really old. Like, it was very old.
A knockoff. We definitely had. And that was my go-to for any book report, any that you didn't go to the Google. You went to the Encyclopedia, but tell us more.
So the Encyclopedia case alleged that the company had made deceptive guaranteed income claims to applicants that were seldom achieved. Also, a few other interesting counts. The FTC alleged the company had actually misrepresented the nature of the positions. They didn't make it clear that these were mostly door-to-door sales positions. And they also misrepresented that they offered certain training opportunities, which did not materialize for most employees.
All right. And then, you know, we could go back even a few decades earlier than that to the Von Schrader case from 1941. Now, the war, of course, was going on, but I guess the FTC was still doing its thing. And this case involved the sale of electric rug cleaning machines that apparently used a rapidly oscillating rubber brushes technology. And the company claimed that $200 to $400 per month was an easy average, which, you know, 1941, that seems pretty good. But according to the FTC, the company actually had no idea what the average profits or earnings were. And so they barred the company from making such representations, and notably barred them from making any atypical earnings claims or atypical claims that implied that they represented the usual or ordinary course of business monetary expectation. And this is a concept that, of course, survives today.
I love these old cases. Now, Von Schrader, we should note.
Oh, no, you need your German accent. Von Schrader. I don't know why. I just feel like it's just that the case name needs an accent with it.
I am really bad at accents, but
okay.
We
got
to note the case, Von Schrader, also had some underlying efficacy issues. And the company had claimed that the rug cleaning machine would, quote, destroy every vestige of germ and grime, which sounds like a very, very 1940s thing to say. And the FTC.
Oh, no, that sounds like a very 2020 thing to say, actually. I'm surprised this wasn't a COVID case, but continue.
Well, and the FTC noted that was not quite the case. The machine was using a soap mechanism that was not a germicide, and therefore, and again, this is a quote, did not destroy every vestige of germ or remove, quote, the microbes of disease, which are carried into the home by every shoe that crosses the threshold. Which makes me want to ask you, Amy, are you a shoes off household or shoes on?
We're a whatever you want to be household. I got dogs, I got kids, or I need one of these machines that actually does what it said it would do. How about you?
shoes off for me. I don't care about guests really too much, but I also try to avoid having guests. So
yes, Daniel, you love to live in. Okay, I'm not going to touch that one, but let's move into some more recent history, because although there are some parallels, the more recent issues involving earning claims do tend to be a bit more complex and nuanced. And perhaps the best example to deserve a deeper dive is the FTC's action under recently former Chair Khan against the ride-sharing app Lyft. And this was a case that was announced just a few weeks before the 2024 election, and it did have a vote on partisan lines, with Ferguson and Holyoke not surprisingly dissenting. Daniel, tell us all about that case.
So the FTC challenged certain earnings representation that Lyft was making for potential drivers. In particular, there were specific hourly amounts, such as, you know, drivers in Atlanta being offered up to $33 per hour. And the issue raised by the majority was whether that $33 amount was adequately substantiated. And the complaint describes those kinds of statements as inflated and states that the vast majority of drivers would not achieve those results and that earnings were exaggerated by 20 to 30%. And most importantly, the complaint alleges that only 20% of the drivers would achieve that advertised result. And that was if you were including bonuses, incentives, and tips. And this is where we get that real division at the commission. Is 20% success enough for an up to earnings claims?
If you're asking Amy Mudge, I would say absolutely. That's the standard we've used for a long time. It can't be a reach for the stars, one person maybe on their best day will get it, but 20% pretty good. But nope, those Biden Dems said hell to the no. They said the drivers basically would just ignore the up to phrase and understand it to mean what the typical driver would earn. So they viewed the claim as unsubstantiated and that any disclaimer that was used was not sufficient to undo that impression. So in effect, they were saying that an up to claim has to be supported at the 50% level, and thus the disagreement.
Yes, indeed. And we had dissenting statements from both Holyoke and Ferguson. Now, Holyoke mainly focused on the fact that she didn't think the FTC had the authority under the notice of penalty offense authority to bring this action and get the penalties that it sought. Ferguson also dissented, but his statement was much more of a deep dive into why he viewed these claims as substantiated.
Yeah, bottom line, and I don't know how much I'm going to agree with Ferguson, but I got to say, I was in violent agreement with him here. You know, Ferguson says the phrase up to means something, and that consumers understand that. You know, in this context, 20% of the drivers were going to make the advertised amount, and it wasn't some sort of extreme outlier. You know, look, he strongly objected to the majority reading of up to, that somehow up to would be, you know, stricken through or equated with likely to achieve, when, you know, that's not what up to means at all. And it's, you know, it's not like it's a hard word. These are two, you know, not even multisyllabic words, up to. But, you know, overall, he said it was just not a reasonable interpretation of an up to claim for consumers to expect the outcome to be one that they would likely achieve.
Yeah, and Ferguson then does this really deep dive into how he describes it as an evolving interpretation of the commission's on up to claims over the years. And it's an interesting and a really important read, of course, now, particularly given the changes that happened January 21st. At times, the FTC expected an appreciable number to achieve the amount and now was moving to a likely to achieve standard. But he notes the literal meaning of the up to construction in this context is that it designates a ceiling of performance that is the maximum amount that one can hope to earn. It's not a claim of likely earnings, which would be considered differently.
So look, needless to say, Ferguson's approach will likely have much broader implications for up to claims beyond the earnings context. And, you know, there has been differences of opinions about what the standard is in the earning context versus a, say, a product performance context, like we saw in the FTC's Windows cases, which we can save for another day. But look, if you're making any sort of up to claims, particularly in the earnings context, it's really important to look at his statements. His statement focuses on up to claims, you know, specifically in this, how much you're going to bring home context, but I think it's incredibly instructive. You know, look, and I also, I have to say, I think there's a happy medium here of, you know, not going to one extreme with the Dems, which everybody's got to get it up to amount, and the Ferguson, well, hey, if one person gets it, maybe it's okay. I kind of like that happy medium, that 20% is a good target amount. The other thing I think is, and, you know, the case, as you said, was very dismissive of disclaimers and qualifying information. But you can consider providing an average or a median amount as well that workers can expect to earn. You know, that, to my mind, is going to give it more context.
Yeah, and you mentioned the Windows case. And to be clear, he also had, Ferguson had a lot of things to say about concerns he has about the way the Windows case was done. So again, if you're relying on the Windows case too much, again, got to make sure you're looking at Ferguson's statement. But also, because we, of course, care about these things, you know, the dueling statements between Kahn and Ferguson just got a little bit personal, with Ferguson noting that, quote, "The chair concludes her statement by accusing me of not prioritizing the protection of workers from unfair and deceptive acts or practices."
Ooh, snap, burn. But, you know, of course, not all recent cases were met with such sharp and pointed dissents. This, you know, should be an area oftentimes where it's not political. I think a good example of this was the Arise Virtual Solutions case, where everybody seemed to agree. This was also a 2024 case. It also involved a gig company, but it was unlike Lyft, to be clear. Arise was a business opportunity that allowed consumers to work from home using the Arise platform, and said that workers could make up to $18 per hour doing customer support, all right, for well-known brands. However, customers often did incur a lot of unreimbursed costs, and so allegedly made far less than the promised amount, what they netted up taking home, with actually 99% of the workers earning less than $18 per hour.
Yeah, and to be clear, here we have an action that was brought under the FTC Act and also under the Business Opportunity Rule. And oddly enough, there were still multiple statements here, but all of the concurring variety. Ferguson opined some on the contextual meaning of up to claims again.
But you know what? I guess that brings up a good point, Daniel. There's another big thing we need to flag that was somewhat surprising and partisan. And that was the issuance of a proposed earning claims rule and then changes to the business opportunities rule right at the end of Kahn's tenure.
Yeah, that did not land very well with the Republicans, to say the least. But let's take a quick look at what the agency did there. There were three separate Federal Register notices that got issued. The first one proposed a brand new rule that would address false or misleading earnings claims in the multi-level marketing industry. There's a second Federal Register notice that would expand the business opportunity rule to cover money-making opportunities, such as business coaching and investment opportunities. And if two wasn't enough, they did a third Federal Register notice that asked a variety of additional questions relating to that proposed new MLM earnings rule. Quite interesting that the FTC ultimately proposed an earnings rule that only focused on the MLM industry.
Yeah, those guys have it rough, to be sure. But yeah, look, let's be clear. This is when, if ever, such a rule will see the light of day, of course, is something we need to ponder. You know, Ferguson, in yet another of his dissenting statements, noted, and I'm going to quote here, "Some of these proposed rules may be in the public interest and well within our legal authority. But whether they are unlawful and whether they are prudent and sound policy choices are decisions that belong to the incoming Trump administration and not to lame duck Biden functionaries. Fortunately, because these are notices of future rulemaking, the Trump administration will decide whether they will ever become final rules."
Stay tuned for that. But Amy, as we reach the end, this is where we usually provide our takeaways. And I'm guessing one takeaway is to really pay close attention to what the FTC is doing these days, particularly with respect to up to claims. We expect that, not surprisingly, the Ferguson concept of up to earnings claims will be the new standard for the next few years, but certainly exercise some caution before you make any sort of major shifts there.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, we got those state AGs that are going to be looking at this. We've got class action lawyers. So abandoning everything you knew or you thought you knew about business earnings claims is probably not wise. But, you know, look, a few other things to keep in mind. You know, really, the opportunities may differ greatly from state to state, from region to region, city to city. So you've got to be mindful of regional variances when you're talking about how much anyone can expect to earn. And look, the labor markets do change a lot. So you got to make sure if you are putting a number out there that it's going to be accurate and it's got to be current. So the more specific you are, the more obligation you have to update and refresh those things. And, you know, again, I said it before, more is more here. If you're giving up to amounts, consider also including average or median earnings as well. And last but not least, and this is just a good one for the ages, listen to your complaints, not only from your customers, but also from your employees and your potential employees. But thank you all for joining us, as we hope you do every other week with us on Ad Nauseam.
Thank you, Amy and Daniel. If you have any questions for Amy or Daniel, their contact information is in the show notes. For more information on the latest developments in ad law, visit our Adventures in Law blog at www.adventures-in-law.com and check out all Ad Nauseam episodes by subscribing to Baker Hosts wherever you get your podcasts. As always, thanks for listening to Baker Hosts. Comments heard on Baker Hosts are for informational purposes and should not be construed as legal advice regarding any specific facts or circumstances. Listeners should not act upon the information provided on Baker Hosts without first consulting with a lawyer directly. The opinions expressed on Baker Hosts are those of participants appearing on the program and do not necessarily reflect those of the firm. For more information about our practices and experience, please visit bakerlaw.com.